This is the BC Outdoor Project podcast, a show dedicated to the education of exploring the backcountry, advocation for the preservation of wildland, and building the leaders in the outdoor industry. Because when we stand in the quiet of the backcountry, we're reminded of what we truly are.
Human.
Today's show is brought to you by Valhalla Pure Outfitters Vernon, a locally owned and operated outdoor gear shop that carries all of my favorite brands. They've got everything you're going to need for your kit, and they're super knowledgeable staff. So definitely stop in if you're in the Okanagan, or you can head over to vpo.ca to look at the full inventory from all the stores in Canada.
Also brought to you by Spear Strength Wellness, an online nutrition and strength coaching platform. We've developed the Backcountry Grit program geared to helping you improve your performance and capacity to adventure further in the backcountry. Check us out on Instagram at Spear Strength Wellness.
Welcome back, everybody. This week we have a returning guest, actually. It's Mel. We last time spoke with her about some dog first aid and some behavior stuff for exploring the backcountry with your little adventure buddy. She is an ER vet out of Seattle, but she's currently traveling all over. She and Austin are actually going to talk about their, I believe it's your guys's, both of your collective first mountaineering trips, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they went up Mount Baker with a group, so I have lots of questions for you. But first of all, let's start. How are you feeling? A couple days post.
I'm still like, is it real? Did it happen? You know, it's like a week ago tomorrow that we did this big thing that we'd been working so hard for and working out for and have been such a big like part of my day and life and routine was like thinking about getting ready for Baker. But it was amazingly beautiful, both the people and the mountain. And I'm just like super grateful to have been able to share it with such a good friend.
Yeah, I feel like the biggest weight of all of it was just the planning of fitting all of the prep work in and coming back and being like, oh, I have free time. Not a lot, let's be real, but more than I did before, and I wasn't worried about if I didn't use that free time to train or prep or get things ready that I would die on a mountain. Like the threat was pretty real, and now it's just not there anymore. So that's very different.
Cool. We'll take it away with, I want to know how you guys picked this trip. Like, it was a guided trip. So how did you pick your outfitter? What was important to you? And then I guess we'll get into it. Like, was it a good choice? I want to hear about that too.
So 10 out of 10 recommend Northwest Alpine Guides if you're doing Baker out of Seattle. Absolutely loved it. I picked the trip. So the trip came about because I had really wanted to consider getting into the sport of mountaineering. I didn't know anything about it. I've been told by many friends that do mountaineering and that like post on Instagram all the time and inspire me that Baker would be a good first mountain to try. And I also picked it because I did a backcountry skiing class this last winter on Baker and just really loved the mountain and that area. I wanted to get to know it better. So I think part of picking your hiking goals is also about, you know, what areas do you really want to start learning and knowing more about as an individual so that you can go back and explore on your own, or at least that's a motivating factor for me. And so having a couple of opportunities to be in different parts of the backcountry with different guides just really gives me a great resource to pick their brains. So that was part of what, like, why Baker was the one that we chose to do over like Rainier or Glacier Peak or some of the other ones that are also kind of beginner friendly. And then I texted Austin and was like, hey, I have this crazy ass goal and I'd like a friend as an accountability buddy. And I know that you have outdoorsy things you're doing and, will you climb this mountain with me? And she said, yes. And then we got our boyfriends and, well, her husband and my boyfriend involved. and so we went as a couple trip, which is great. In terms of picking out the program we did, I like my bigger goal longer term is like gaining skills because I want to go like ski mountaineering and like build off of this trip to be able to do more independently. And so I really wanted a trip that like also had a mountain school component and not just a summit bagging goal. So the trip that we did was 5 days and it was 2.5 to 3 days of mountain school. And then the summit as like the cherry on top. And I think that was also good for both Austin and I. At different points, we were like really mentally intimidated, and to be able to come back and say like, look, even if we don't get to summit, you know, if we're not fit enough, if we're, you know, the weather's bad, like there's still a ton of value to get out of this trip through all the skills. And so I did a bunch of research and talked to like friends that had done different types of mountain schools and kind of picked a group based off of those recommendations.
Yeah. And I like that the location is very like user-friendly. So coming from Washington area, knowing the area of Cedro Woolley and Bellingham and things being so close, it was a really enticing mountain choice for me, especially since it was one that I grew up hearing about. It was definitely already at the top of my list, like growing up, but less intimidating in my mind than Mount Rainier, as far as like you hear about how much more of the training goes into Mount Rainier. And it's kind of like, I'd like to have a gauge as to how successful is my training towards these things. How has it been? How has it been working for me? Because it's a sport, quote unquote, activity that I've never trained for. So I have nothing to gauge it. And so I did like that that was kind of a good stepping stone that Mel had looked into and that I'd heard about as well. And then as far as picking the guide group, when she had picked them and like sent us the thing, like, hey, look into these guys, what do you think? It's Northwest Alpine Guides and then Mountain Gurus. And they also expand into so many other mountains and areas and regions, not just in Washington, which is also what I really liked about us picking this group, is it's a resource for, you know, should we expand our ventures down the road? It would be really nice for that consistency, right? With a group you know and trust and that maybe has like morals in the company. If you like them, it's nice to know that they expand past just being guides like on Mount Baker or just in Washington.
I had only heard good things about this group too. After you sent me what you were up to, I did ask a couple people about it and I'd only heard good things. So I'm glad that it was 10 out of 10. That's awesome. So you guys have both mentioned training. And I know that both of you were taking that very seriously. Mel, I saw your videos. Austin, I think you kept it a little bit more low key, but what the heck did you guys do and how did it go?
I picked like the hike 6 months in advance to like give us time to recoup prepare. Like both Austin and I had some like health stuff last fall. And so this was also like a really good goal for us to like get back in shape and like get our bodies where we wanted to be. Like, I don't care about sexy girl summer and having a bikini body, but I want a functional body that like does the things I want it to do. And so this is like a big goal to like getting back there. They do have recommendations. So like a lot of the guiding programs will send out like information packets where they talk about like, here are your target weights, your target times, how long you should be able to hike, at what pace. And then they do give kind of broad general guidelines of like, you know, 6 months out from the trip, like consider, you know, increasing your just base cardio and endurance and work out 3 days a week doing X, Y, and Z. And five, you know, months out, now you should be increasing your weight and doing blah, blah, blah. Right. And so they do give you kind of a baseline guide. But I think for both Austin and I, I've never trained for like endurance sports before. I've always been more of like a team sport where it's like high intensity for an hour or like competition type stuff. I did do like a trek across Maine once, which was like 70 miles on a bike a day for 3 days. But like outside of that, I've never done anything endurance-y. And so that was really different because it wasn't about like max PRs or, you know, like HIIT workouts alone would not be sufficient for training for something like this. And so incorporating longer workouts and actual hiking, like people always say, like the best way to get in shape for hiking is to go hike. And that was like the hardest part to get on my calendar, especially because I travel a lot. And so we were really intentional of like when I was back in Washington, of picking like 3 to 4 hikes a month that we're going to try to do to increase like altitude or gain in a day and increase time. And then we did a mix of like weight training, lots of step ups, lots of squats, with like increasing baseline cardio, and trying to work in like the endurance zone, which is like zone 2 to 3 of your max, of getting your heart rate to kind of sit in that zone.
Yeah, I think I really enjoy that when, I mean, being from the fitness background, I liked when they give you guidelines, especially when they give you something you can shoot for based around like the hike itself of like, if you can go this many feet of elevation in this much time, stopping an average of, you know, 10 minutes every hour-ish with this much of a pack versus this weight of a pack. Those kinds of things were helpful for an end game, but it does definitely prove more challenging if you were someone that didn't maybe have the background in sports and hiking that Mel and I did have, if you didn't know how to then back scale that for yourself, which again is when like maybe getting a trainer, maybe getting somebody who does these things could help you, just like triathletes have coaches that kind of help set up their intervals for them and base them. I've done some triathlons, some like sprint ones, shorter ones, which still end up being endurance, quote unquote. I've also done some century rides and some 200 mile rides on bikes that are endurance. And it's a lot of time spent, but there's always a way to stop. There's always a way to like get in your car and go home. There's always an aid station that can just come to you. And I think that was the other thing that's still different, even when you're backpacking and you know you can kind of just like meander down trail, like the conditions of the weather, the fact that things are significantly further out from anything else. And it was conditions I've never actually been in for that length of time and was going to be doing this training that made me kind of like, you need to make sure you feel good and figure your shit out, or else there are different consequences than there are in other endurance type sports or any other kind of supported competitive goal-oriented sport. This is just a goal for you of like, hope I make it. And I have no idea how to gauge if my training was successful, but yeah, we did it. So that's pretty rewarding.
All right. So you prepared physically. Talk to me a little bit about, and they had a monster of a gear list for you guys. Like it was yeah, the biggest gear list I've ever seen. I know that you were able to rent and borrow stuff, which is super cool, but talk to me a little bit about the gear prep work.
Yeah, the gear list was great. Just to make sure you had all the stuff. I think there's a fair amount that crosses over, right? So like for both Austin and I, and if you're thinking about getting into mountaineering and like doing this kind of thing, I would definitely recommend like just start with like taking a solid backpacking adventure trip, like in nice weather in the summer, and see if you like being out on the trail for 3 days in a tent. Like start there and then work up to like, and then Austin and I went winter camping in March because Austin and Luke really hadn't done a lot of winter camping, and I'd grown up in Maine and really loved it and knew that camping for 5 days on a mountain was just going to be like soul medicine. But I wanted to make sure that Austin and Luke liked it and had a good time and had warm enough bags and like knew how to, you know, had all the right gear. So like testing your gear and doing some like safe testing of stuff. Like we went to, what was the lake we went to, Austin?
Trillium, I think.
Trillium, that's right. Mount Hood, which is like 2 miles parking lot, and we brought our adventure van. So like if people were really cold and miserable, we could have like hiked out and just like had, you know, slept in a van that was warm and dry and like, you know,
reassess.
So, like, test your stuff. Yeah, reassess, test your stuff. Yeah. The gear list is definitely helpful to start with. There is a fair amount that overlaps with just general backpacking gear. But then there's definitely some like sport specific stuff that we didn't have, that it was really nice that the company that we use, Northwest Alpine Guides, partners with the Gear Hut. And so they do have rentals through them for the individual stuff that you might need. So I had to rent several items. So I had to get an ice axe and a helmet, harness, and I actually needed like the hard shell pants because my rain pants don't fully zip on the outside, and it's really nice not having to take your boots on and off when it's raining. We had crampons, and then there was some stuff that they had purchase just because you wouldn't necessarily want to use used gear in case it's like broken or, you know, not working. And so a lot of the kind of actual hiking or climbing and rescue carabiners and things like that, you were able to purchase directly from them. So you knew you were getting exactly what you needed. But there was definitely a little bit of like additional financial component in terms of like making sure you get all the gear that you need. Like I already had a 0-degree sleeping bag, but Austin and Luke had to get some new sleeping bags. I bought a bigger backpacking backpack because the one that I had was really better for like 3 days. And, you know, this is more of a 5-to-7-day expedition pack that I got. So I think thinking through that stuff and deciding like what on that list really makes sense for you to purchase because you want the security of knowing the gear that you have is comfortable and you're going to use it versus like what's comfortable renting. And so the two things for me specifically, or three things specifically that I wanted to make sure that I had and were mine, where I chose to buy boots ahead of time because I really was worried. I've had bad fitting boots before. I have weird feet. So I was really worried that about getting blisters or being uncomfortable, and your feet are your number one rescue item when you're in the mountains. And then I got, and then I bought that pack because I've also had bad fitting packs before that like destroyed me. And so I just really wanted to make sure that I was comfortable with the pack and with the weight. And then the third thing I did purchase were Glacier glasses again, because the fit's really important. And then I have, prescription glasses. And so I wanted to make sure that what I was using on a mountain was going to function well for me.
Yeah. I think it was a really great thing to know that far ahead, how much gear it really entailed, and that they labeled and laid it all out. They were also really very helpful if you called and had questions about how important is this versus this, because since you had it ahead of time, you could shop around, which again, as much as you can try to be frugal, some things just are what they are price-wise with some of this stuff. So it is a luxury to get to do that and to be able to afford it, but you can find ways to save money here and there. So it's not completely out of reach for someone that maybe doesn't have all the gear. There are ways. I know Mel and Neil would go like months ahead and they'd be telling us all of their deals, and we'd share back and forth if we saw things or where we saw something was a deal, of like going to these outdoor shops off season and looking at their deal racks. Anytime they happen to drive by one, they'd be like, hey, let's do a date day real quick and just go in there and check their, you know, restock rack.
REI resource section, super baller. We got most of our stuff there, and it's like 40 to 50% reduced. And usually it's someone like myself who, like, the first pair of mountaineering boots that I bought got horrible blisters when we went winter camping together. And I was like talking to Luke and was like, I can only take small steps. Maybe that's normal in mountaineering boots. And he was like, no, that's not normal. You should take them back. Right. So they went 2 miles. Yeah. And like, we're otherwise pristine, and I returned them to REI, and, you know, they're in the restore section. Someone got them for 50% off. And then I found, my boots in the restore section, and they would normally would have been like 460, and I got them for 210. So REI restore, 100% recommend. It just means you got to like stock the racks and just like be willing to pop in and see what's available and kind of know your gear list of what you're trying to work through.
Yeah. And then also, like, we spent a lot of the time with some of the gear that you had to buy that you couldn't rent. We spent a lot of time, like the few weeks leading up to it, kind of looking between different sites and making sure we had enough time if we could find it at another outdoor store that was a little cheaper, but it was the same caliber of carabiner, or even the same one, but on sale because someone was having a sale or like a Memorial Day sale or something. We just made sure we had enough time to get it shipped to us. And it was really nice knowing that we could get those things, keep the receipts, not take anything off until we got there to check with the guides. And that if for some reason it didn't work, then we just knew we needed a budget that, hey, then we just buy what they have. Like, at least we knew that no matter what, they would have what we needed if we had to. We just had to mentally prepare and budget accordingly. And so it was really helpful to just kind of feel very well taken care of by their preparation outline that they gave us, and that you didn't get up there and then be like, cool, I don't have this one thing. Now I can't do this trip that I paid money to do, because they just have anticipated all of it. So that was really helpful.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about which backpacks you guys took.
I ended up getting, again, REI resale. So I wasn't so like worried about brand and stuff as I was about liter volume. So I'm an Osprey girl at heart. I have 3 Osprey backpacks of various sizes. I have a problem. My name is Melanie. I'm a backpack addict. I have a wall of 20 backpacks in my garage.
I've seen it. That's why I'm asking. I saw it on one of your posts. I was like, I don't know what she's taking. Okay, go.
So the backpack that I took was a 58 plus 10. So 58 liter pack with a 10 liter brain. That was a Gregory. It's the woman specific pack. It has an adjustable frame. And they're like backpacking, mountaineering backpack. So it has a couple of cool features on it that are very helpful for mountaineering. So it has an outside like stuff pocket that you can put your crampons in so they don't damage your other gear. And then it has on their side, 2 different kind of loop systems where you can attach like ice axes and poles. So a couple of features that just make it really convenient for those types of tools. It also has a separation, like the main pocket has like the suspension thing at the bottom that you can remove if you want the full height top to bottom. But if you want the like basement of the pack to be separate, you can leave it in there. And that was really helpful because we put like all of our bathroom potty stuff down in there and like our first aid kit and stuff like that we wanted like easily accessible without the rest of our gear getting wet. It did rain the first 2 days. So that was kind of helpful to have a couple of different pockets that I could access for things that were not wet sensitive, but like my down bag could stay nice and dry. So it worked out well, but it's not the lightest pack in the world. So eventually I'll probably get the Osprey 65 plus.
She'll give me her Gregory. Yeah. So there was a pack size requirement because of having to carry all the gear of 65 liter or more. And so they said like, it's a requirement, like hard stamp, right? If you do not have that size, you will be renting one of ours kind of thing. And so Luke and I actually have backpacks that we use for backpacking with like a separate metal-based hard structure frame that we love. It's so comfortable. It's the first time I've ever not had shoulder problems with, you know, several days in of backpacking, because it's just phenomenal. But they're hunting packs, which is why they're so well set up and equipped, because they're meant to be able to like disperse load really well if you put game or have to quarter an animal and carry it out. That being said, they are not mountaineering packs, but they were big enough, so we took them. But the way that these ones were designed is when you're having to be able to get into your pack or want to get to the bottom of your bag for some reason to either get, you know, certain hunting guns or implements that you need, whatever, it zips all the way down the sides and the front so that you can open it up in a flap. Kind of reminds me a little bit more of like a dual zip version of like the Mystery Ranch bags that allow you so that you can get to the bottom of your pack if you need it, instead of having to pull things out from the top.
This is the only type of bag I will buy. Okay. Continue on. So, well, I hate the ones you're like rifling through at the bottom. Just hate them.
I know. Let me just enlighten you though a little bit, because I feel the same way, except for certain situations I've learned I may change my mind. And this is one of them. So because of that, we also have an outside pocket that runs along the front that probably almost like a third or a quarter's worth of your center bag's ability to hold shit is the front. So the center main console is actually a bit smaller, even though it's still big and tall. It's not as expandable because then you have other separated pockets that do not have a brain that you can, or sorry, a divider that you can zip away, like in Melanie's as a basement. Ours is on the front of the pack. But this is like a hard zip inside the pack. So the problem we ran into with this, even though it was big enough, we made it work, but it was significantly harder to get everything to fit the way they wanted when it was raining. Even though we had a rain fly, we were going to be setting stuff down in snow. You're going to be covered in colder conditions. You're going to get more dew and moisture and condensation from heat and snow and extreme cold. And then we also had rain. So everything they want for us is to put a contractor bag or a trash bag in the very center and shove everything into it, anything that could possibly get wet. And that's most of your shed, except for your bear canister, your crampons, ice axe, things that already go on the outside. So the problem being, if I have to put my down sleeping bag even closed, if I have to put my pillows, I need to put my sleeping pads. You want nothing wet. You're in cold environment. You do not want things to start wet. Everything, clothes, all of it. You don't want, you know, any of the tent to get wet. Same idea. So everything, including the tent, has to be inside, especially when we started raining. So that means everything needs to go in one big giant Mary Poppins pocket, which I didn't have. It's fairly large, but not as big as something like what Melanie had, which is a bottomless pit. And the idea is you're not going to be taking your stuff out when you're hiking or doing things anyways to get to camp for risk of it getting wet. So you don't need to access the bottom of your bag. And even when you have a bag that you can access the bottom, you usually try to put things you need least at the bottom anyways, right? So the principle still applies. But that made it very difficult. The other thing that made it very difficult of having that smaller main pocket that I was expected to fit everything in, instead of like a 2/3 size pocket and a 1/3 size pocket, that stuff couldn't split across because they're big pieces of equipment that can't be put in different compartments, was the double zip. Every time I would try to finally like shove stuff down further, the zips would start to come down on the side again. And so it was really hard when I was trying to shove as much as I could that might be a little too big to zip all the way back up. So there was points when I looked like, you know, the person at the airline trying to put their suitcase together, that Mel's like, why don't you sit on it and I'll try and zip it for you. And you're in the snow and all this other stuff trying to get it. Like, I sweat more getting that on than I did the first like third of the damn summit hike, like just trying to get my bag put together, putting the tent in there, all that other stuff, even disassembled. That was splitting the tent between me and Luke, my partner. That wasn't even me taking the whole tent. If I was going solo and had to take my tent, I would need a large compartment or commit to just like having it tied on the outside in a trash bag because I had nothing for it. I also had to buy accessory loops in order to carry my ice axe more safely so that I wasn't going to tear any of my gear, because I didn't have as many of those attachments on it because it's not a mountaineering pack. Yeah, go ahead.
I forgot to give you that.
It's okay.
I knew it. I was like, oh God, I forgot. As soon as I got in the car and I got across the border and I saw the border guard like kind of looking at it, I was like, I forgot the leash and the little rubber thing.
So, it's all right. Sorry. It's all right. I bought the rubber things and then we brought the little like attachment for it. And I still was one of the coolest ones there because I was the only one that brought my own ice axe and didn't rent one. So you did get a shout out on the mountain. But yeah, it was just one of those little things. I also have, because I don't have a brain on that pack. It's a one long pack because it's designed to be able to fit rifles and things stuffed into it. There's no brain on it because you don't have to unclip the brain in order to pull your gun out or your bow out or whatever. And so putting your helmet there on the first half of the trek up, because you're not using a helmet, was also, I bought, I don't know if it was Deuter.
It was Deuter. Yeah. I loved your accessories, man. I was like, this looks so sick.
Yeah, we made it work. But those are things that you don't know, right? When you
It was extra stuff.
Your own version of a bag. Yeah. So just like, I did chat with the gear guides and they're there before I went and they told me like, hey, if it's big enough, but you need these things. So we got all the attachments we needed. Now we have it. I got to use the frame I knew I wanted to use when I was already nervous about my comfort, my fitness. And it's a frame on a pack that I've used for a long time. However, going forward for ease of getting to pack more stuff more easily in the center, it would have been nicer to have. It's one time I was like, I actually would like just one big giant stuff sack, because Mel and Neil were done packing and they started after us this morning and they're done ahead of us and eating oatmeal in the fucking tent. And we're still trying to fucking sit on my damn bag. So those are the things that I might have done differently.
I would offer as a pro tip, because I'm an organizational person. If you've seen the pictures of the inside of my garage, you also know this. I hate the giant rifling situation of the Mary Poppins pack as well. And so I use compression sacks and like the what you use when traveling. Those little like packing cubes in my bag. And I find that to be a really helpful solution. A lot of the mountaineering packs that do have that giant pack also have a center zip, which when I demonstrated this to Austin and Luke, they were like, so sad. Cause they're like, oh, it's like what we could do with our hunting pack. But also you have a giant pocket. So mine also, the Gregory, just to, you know, give Gregory a little plug, has a zip where the front zips open. down the center. And if I have everything stacked in my packing cubes, I could pull out an individual packing cube, even from the bottom of my pack without having to rifle through the whole thing. So the backpacking backpacks are getting smarter for sure. And although it adds a little bit of weight to have the packing cubes, it's like minuscule, and I think it's well worth it.
I want to ask you guys about every single thing you brought. I'm looking through your Instagram to see what tents you used and things like that, but we should probably do another podcast around all of that and keep moving forward here.
Yeah, I don't think we've done a tent podcast. We'll have to do something about tents and talk about seasonal stuff.
So well, yeah. I have lots. Yeah, I want to hear what you guys took for. I know, Austin, you took Bishop Pass sleeping bags, but
we also learned a bunch about down and loft and packability and how it keeps you warm. So, like, we can definitely do a staying warm podcast at some point too, because that was a whole conversation I had a deep dive with one of the guides about.
Yeah, it's important. There's a lot to know, but once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to ask day by day. What was the program? I know that you spent a lot of time probably talking about gear the first day, and you said you had snow school the first 3 days. Kind of walk me through the trip.
So day one, you meet in Sandra Woolley at the guide hut to do gear check at 9 o'clock in the morning. And you meet your guides there, you meet the rest of your group there. They go through, they literally have you unpack your entire pack and they go through the gear list, like item by item, to make sure that you have what you need. And if you don't have what you need, or they have concerns about the quality of what you brought, then they'll talk to you about what they recommend renting. So, an example of that was I have an Arc'teryx down jacket, that's a 750 fill, but it's, loft and packability, is higher, which makes it less insulative. And so they had me rent one of their like giant marshmallow parkas just in case. I didn't use it on the trip, but had the weather been different and you're stuck on a mountain for 5 days and you're freezing your butt off, like I would have wanted it. So definitely like right to bring the right thing. But yeah, so they went through all of your stuff and like made any recommendations. And then at 10 o'clock, 10:30, we packed everything into our cars and caravan to the trailhead. We tried to carpool just because trailhead parking is limited. And you're leaving your car there for a couple of days. You do need forest permits. That was another thing they helped us with, was knowing like what kind of forest permit we need for parking as well. And then the guides got our actual permits to be on the mountain. But those are things, if you're doing it individually, that you'd need to make sure that you talk to the park service and you know like what permits you need. So day one we hiked in, it was like I think five miles and like 3200 gain that first day to get to high camp. And we camped just outside of the Easton Glacier, like just off of the Easton Glacier. We did the Easton Glacier Deming route. Day one and day two. So day one was hiking in. We did, you know, set up tent, set up camp, and did kind of a debrief of what to expect, and talking about like mountain life and, you know, courtesy things. Like when someone screams privacy, it means they're probably pooping, so don't look over there. There's no cover, you're above tree line.
They did a wag bag tutorial because yes, we got a wag bag tutorial. People that never have used them.
And how to find the primo toilet spot. And then we had dinner as a group. We had a fresh meal that night. And then day two and day three were mountain school. So we started with talking about how to walk efficiently in snow, because it's a lot like walking in sand and it can eat up a lot of your energy. So learning like specific steps and movement, both for safety and for efficiency. We did a ropes class and knot tying class, because you do end up doing ropes teams with glaciated travel. And then we did ISAC self-arrest that day. And then the next day of school, which was day three of the trip, we did glaciated ropes travel. So we got to practice, we got to do our knots to make our rope team and practice walking as a group. And we hiked probably about for an hour and 15 minutes, like maybe 12 to 1500 gain, like up the glacier partway, stopped, turned around. And then we headed to a crevasse and we did crevasse rescue training. they do a really good job talking about how your skills build. So like your first thing of self-rescue is your feet. So learning how to walk in snow, but then if you're on more treacherous terrain, your second is crampons. So we also learned how to do that on day 2, put your crampons on, how to use them, how to make sure they're tight, how they fit. And then step 3 being now you're in even more treacherous terrain, you're going to use your ice axe. And then the most treacherous terrain, you're going to be on a ropes team. And should someone fall, how do you rescue them if they fall through the snow? And so that was great because I really feel like we got to build skills over the period of time. Each layer reinforced the layer below. So unlike other classes I've done where they're like, let's tie all of these knots one time. And then by the time you leave, you've already forgotten how to do them. Like I could still do a clove hitch right now if you asked me to, you know, like I feel really good about it. And they gave you like unlimited time to work on these skills because we had so much time on the snow together. So they kept asking like, does anyone want to run through it again? Like, do people feel comfortable? Like gave us as much time, especially with the crevasse rescue for like setting up anchors and setting up the rescue stuff. And then day 4 we summited, which was 4,000 gain that day. And, it was like, 7 miles, I think. So it was like a full 8 hours, 9 hours on the glacier. And then we partied that night. And by that, I meant we went to bed at 5:30 PM and, we got up the next morning and we hiked out, but we got to, I saved my favorite meal for summit night. And so that was my party is I had Indian curry and then I went and slept real hard.
Yeah. Sleeping felt like a party after that. It was great. And it was so beautiful. So the third day when we woke up, the first 2 days were misty/rainy and waves and very socked in. So like just fog. So you basically saw snow and like the tents because they're bright. And like a ways in front of you, but then it kind of just everything below disappeared and summit stuff disappeared. And then by the third day, stuff started to clear and we woke up and like, I remember 2 different people in our groups. Neil was one of them, Melanie's partner. I just hear them from while we're inside our tent. They're like, oh fuck. Like, okay. They can see things. And you realize what's been around us the last 2 days we've been working on stuff. And we start realizing we're above the clouds, you know, and it's beautiful. And so then it was really hot. Right. And so that was the other thing too, was learning about layers and what to layer when you're in these like rapidly swinging conditions of being active, but you're still in snow. And I've experienced some of that with like downhill skiing for years, but it's completely different when you're like actively climbing and then stopping and you're on a glacier or there's wind or there's sun that's coming out and it's very reflective and bright on your skin, but you're actually not hot from it, right? There's those different things to consider. So they got to
I was really surprised about the reflectivity of the light and how bright it was. Like snow blindness is no joke. And it's hot. Like it, like we would get, like, I didn't bring shorts and a short sleeve t-shirt. Not that I would have worn them, 'cause I would have been afraid of like getting third degree burns from the sun, but it was like 80 or 90 degrees. Like, I mean, literally it felt like we were roasting in an oven in the afternoon that it was sunny and then it would be like 30 degrees at night. So yeah. It's pretty extreme shifts. And so like, thank God for sun shirts is all I can say.
Yeah. It was so bizarre and different of what you realize you want or don't want or what it's like and learning your body too. 'Cause there's pictures where like Luke, even with the big shifts is like still in his sun shirt at the stops. And meanwhile, I'm like, cool. If you're not using it, I'm going to put on your puffy, my puffy and my Gore-Tex. And I have my soft shell underneath and I have my sun shirt so that I can sit here on my butt for 10 minutes and freeze while my sweat is cold. And then I'll strip it all back off right before we start going. And he's just like, thank God we've stopped. And he's in the sun shirt, you know, like everybody's just so different. And then learning your temperatures was a really cool thing too, of getting to acclimate to being in that area and knowing your body with getting to practice the first day of crevasse stuff, walking up to that area and learning kind of what your body feels like personally, because it's very different than what they could recommend to someone else or what, you know, your go-tos are going to be from now on. What jackets did you actually like? How would you revamp your layering system for that particular sport? So that was also something else that like felt like part of mountain school too, was learning your gear, even if you've used it before, because you're using it in a whole new situation and all together. So that was really cool to just kind of really feel like you're getting to really put all of your stuff to the test. A lot of times you buy a lot of things and you hear about people that take stuff and have never taken it out of the package. We got to use all the stuff. There was nothing unnecessary, and then really learn a lot about it. And I got to climb on ice. They let me ice climb, and that was really cool. They also had each of us practice being the rescued, which I thought was also really great. A lot of times you always end up learning how to rescue someone, but it's like, how do you train yourself to be okay and not freak out being the person that's hanging, right? And so getting your first experience being the person laying, like belaying off the edge, so that now you're the one hanging. If you are the one that fell in the crevasse, even though it's slow-mo and you're doing it by choice, it makes your first experience with it much more in control, so that you might panic or freak out less when it actually happens, because you can remember what it felt like when you've been in that situation before.
I can also tell you that my harness is quite comfortable to sit in for 20 minutes. So I went and bought one.
What'd you get? Really tested that
harness. It's the Petzl mountaineering harness.
The altitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. That's a good one. So did they put you, I've never done crevasse rescue. Did they put you in an actual crevasse, or how did they set that up?
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. No, nope.
It was not a big crevasse. It wasn't like a bottomless pit to nowhere. And it was okay. A fairly like low angle. So, you had a wall that you were like bouncing off of. If people go to my Instagram, hike with Mel, you'll see a picture of me hanging out in my harness in the crevasse. But I do think it was good practice, because it's realistic, right? So we had a backup rope on us, that was tied to like a main snow anchor. But then we were tied into our rope line, and we would simulate like someone falling. And so the person would go over the edge of the crevasse on the backup line, and then the rest of the team would practice the, you know, falling, and they would like dive with their ice axes into the snow to self-arrest. And then they would transfer the load from the rope line to the anchor system that they set up. So, I mean, it really was like a true reenactment of what would happen, but in a controlled setting and with a secondary line that if for whatever reason your snow worker failed, or you didn't set it up correctly, or you didn't transfer load correctly, you know, there was going to be a 1-inch give before you were caught by the backup line as the rescuee. So.
And they did pick a crevasse that was relatively open-faced on the one. So yeah. It wasn't like you were shoved into somewhere claustrophobic, right? They made sure that like your first experience of it was going to be like, hey, even though if you ever did go down in this, you might have something that's more closed in around you, it's still a very similar feeling of you're hanging against snow. And so
over the edge.
Yeah.
And I think the other part of that too, is there's a component of like self-rescue that the first question you ask is, can you get yourself out? Right. So as the victim, quote unquote, of the fall, like it's, you're not passive in the rescue process. And so I think that this simulates that better too, right? Because it's like, if you can, you know, get yourself out, right? If you're not that far in and it's a low angle and you can use your ice axes and you can pull yourself up over the ledge, like that's step one. If you're injured and you're too low, or it's an angle that you can't do that, then your team needs to set up the rope system to help haul you out. But when you get close enough to the lip and to the edge, like you're starting to help that team by walking up the ice with your crampons and like getting up over that lip. So I think from that perspective too, it's more realistic that it's like being the one being rescued is not passive, and different from other snow sports, which was fascinating to me. It's more likely to happen. Like it's more likely to fall in a crevasse than like get stuck in an avalanche, for example, which is my other rescue training I've done in snow. But with crevasses, it's much less likely that you have serious injury or life-threatening injury. And there's a much higher percent chance of rescue compared to like an avalanche. And it's more likely that you rescue and then continue on to your camping or whatever else you do. You might not summit, like you may have minor injuries, but you know, usually that person is still an active participant of the group, which unfortunately with avalanches is not always the case. So that was another part of the learning curve for me, was just like my expectations of snow rescue were very different from other snow sports that I've done.
That's wild. I had never heard that before. Okay. You get to the top and your pictures are beautiful, by the way. I would love to share them. You've got this big, beautiful bluebird day, and then you head back down. When you guys are reflecting on this trip, what are those couple key moments where you felt like that trip paid off? Like you learned something, or you saw something, or like what do you take away? What are the big moments?
I mean, a huge motivator to why I do this is like putting myself intentionally in the way of an amazing beauty, which like
that's why I hiked in front of her.
Yeah. Austin's ass looked amazing the whole time.
Those harnesses really do it for you. They really add a lot of shape.
They give you that apple bottom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge motivating factor for me for unplugging. My life is extremely busy. I'm in a transition right now with my job where I'm going to be on call and have less freedom and availability in some ways and more freedom and availability in others. And so this was a good time to kind of reflect on boundary setting and expectations, and that like this type of activity is really important for filling my cup. And how do I continue to prioritize that in my new role? And so that was a big part of this challenge for me too, was kind of the work-life balance side of things and managing to not like put this stuff on hold because I'm trying to achieve things in other areas of my life. And so like no tech for 5 days or very limited tech for 5 days, and, you know, just being in the mountains, is hugely restorative to me. I had no freaking clue that Baker is an active fucking volcano with a caldera. Like that was cool up there. And I was like, wait, what? There's like magma down there. like I knew it was active, but I didn't know it was like Pompeii. so that was kind of a fun surprise. And the other part for me about being on a mountain, which I don't know how much I shared this with Austin either, but my mom is really the one who got me into mountain sports and hiking, and she's been my mountain adventure buddy for a very long time. And we're kind of getting to a transition in ages where like she can't do quite as much anymore, and for sure can't do something this rigorous anymore. And so when I was up on the top of the mountain, I was just like thinking about her, and I got her a little rock that I put in my pack and I brought down for her as a little souvenir. And so yeah, I mean, just the mountains for me is like reflective about like the village that gets me to where I am, and the people that I love that connect with nature too, and sending all the good vibes out in the world.
I love that.
I think there's a couple of things for me. One, I love learning stuff. I love learning new things, not to be the best at it. Otherwise I'd be the best at a lot of other things with the amount of things I've tried in my life. But I just like knowing. I like having the option to know something and to know what I maybe never knew was out there. So I loved that this was a school one, because then no matter what, I had something to look forward to about it that is equally as important to me as standing at the very top, is like increasing my ability to thrive in this world and my ability to do cool shit and hard stuff, which I think is another thing why Mel and I have become such good friends too with this stuff, is not everybody wants to join us on some of these adventures. so that was really cool for me, was the, when we got done with the crevasse rescue and everything, I just felt like I was like, if I went home now, if this was all it was, I'd still be on a high right now. So that was a really good feeling when you tell yourself that that'll be enough, but then when you actually feel that it was, and like the rest is just like a cherry on top and like a pat on your back, is pretty cool. That was the one of the first big things. Another big one for me was, when we were climbing on the way up to the summit, I remember thinking about the parameters they gave us for training, and me thinking that like okay, we have between 6 to 7 hours. And then it's kind of like, we might miss our window if we're taking too long. And there were some periods in it where, like, I'm still getting used to having a little bit different body from when I had to have some health stuff done in the fall. So just not knowing what to expect, or feeling slower than I've been in my past, or feeling like I don't have the same power. Like, I might be able to mentally just grit through things, but the power that I'm used to having just be there is not there as much, even with the training. And so that was already an uncharted kind of unknown territory for me, when you don't know what it's going to feel like. Cause, you know, I imagine like, it's like when someone gets older and they remember what it felt like when they were younger, you know, and all of a sudden it doesn't work the same. And so I remember thinking that and thinking like, wow, I'm going to be slowing us down if I'm not keeping up with another part of the group or whatever, even though our team was doing good. And then when our guide had said like, oh, like you guys are going to make it in like 5.5 hours, including your breaks. And it was like, oh, even though we felt we were slow, we were still ahead of the goal that we trained for this entire time. But my perspective was so skewed. It's like, I couldn't grasp that in the middle of it. But then when it was like, set out in numbers and compared, I was like, oh shit, we're doing great. Like we're not the worst they've ever seen. We're actually moving at a pretty good clip and doing a good job. I'm just holding myself to a standard of the past and not actually where we're at now and what's expected. So for me, just realizing the privilege that I have in the what my body is capable of, even in overcoming other things, the fact that we still could perform at that level and like at what I thought of as my lowest level or outcome from a training thing, and most unsure I've ever been about going into something, to then still come out above average was pretty fucking cool. And I know that that really like hit home for me of like that when people talk about being grateful for their body at whatever level it's at the time, to feel it is different than to talk about it. And so when we got to the top and like we crested that iron wall, and I realized that like, oh, that's the part everyone, the Roman wall that everyone was so worried about. And the slush was pretty shitty. That's fair. But once we sorted it out and got it in a good order of like weight and not post-holing and everything with the whole team and working together, got to the top. I was like, that was actually my favorite part. And it's the part I was most scared about or thought I'd fail at. And like, it felt the best. Was a pretty like cool feeling when it like resonates with you instead of just talking about it in theory, to feel it was pretty cool, to be like, my body can do incredible stuff even when I don't give it the credit it deserves. I'm glad that
I'm so glad, Austin, that I didn't hike with you before last fall, because I did it in like 2.5 hours and I would have died, and I would just sat at that caldera smelling sulfur at the bottom of the Roman nose wall whatever thing. And just been like, you do you, girl. I got gummy bears. See you in an hour.
Yeah.
I wouldn't been able to keep up with you.
Yeah. It's just it. Yeah. It was really cool just to feel, you know, and I think that I've always kind of felt that in certain competitions, all the different bodybuilding and CrossFit and Ollie lifting and all these other competitions and playing volleyball and everything, all these things that were like high rated and rewarded competition, you get in the moment. And it's like in those situations, I always knew to be like, all right, so I average, you know, this many toes to bar in a set or blah, blah, blah. When I get to competition, it'll be, you know, 2 to 5 times more, like in my head, like I already know I'm going to perform. Because I know that about myself. This was a completely different beast, because it's not about perform. It's more about survive. It's more about get through, right? It's a completely different thing. It's not reps you can stop. You don't really have that option, right? You can take breaks, but you just don't, right? And so it was that unknown territory. And then to realize that like, whatever my superpower it is, may it be like, that I have a motor or that I'm a Clydesdale or something. I don't know, but it worked and it still pulled through for me. Even though I doubted it, my body didn't let me down. And I feel like so many times they talk about how your mind gives up before your body does. And I felt like I was struggling with the inverse, and then it proved me wrong. So it was pretty cool. I hate that I'm crying right now. I'm going to edit part of this out.
No, you're not allowed, because I'm actually trying very hard not to cry. I love you. Right. I know you were really worried about this too. Like,
yeah.
And I knew you were going to be fine. I know that about you, but I totally understand that that barrier that you kind of have for yourself going into something like this. And you guys did something totally incredible. This is one of the hardest sports out there. One, it's expensive to get into. Two, it just takes a totally different brain. Like if you go into any bookstore and look at the adventure section, you're going to find all of these books about people surviving this sport, right? Like it's not just, it's not just to go out and do it. You have to have the right brain for it and you have to have the right motive. And I think you guys both showed up and figured out, learned something about yourself, which is really, really cool.
Yeah. And that brings me to the third thing, I guess, since you asked for like two or three things, was just like that same kind of feeling when we were actually sitting at the top and all chatting. And then we got up to the top and got to take pictures of like, you know, for the gram of like the four of us together, like the whole group. Right. But like the four of us together and like with our guide, when she took, she was like jumped into pictures with us and we kept talking about putting these pictures on our family wall. And it's true, right? Like you realize, fucking hey, god damn it, I think I'm just tired, that's what it is. I can't imagine. You realize like what these kinds of experiences bring to you as humans together and a team. And like hearing Mel in my ear with stuff as she could tell, like the fact that I wouldn't even say something yet or complain about myself yet or be worried that I was slowing the team down. And she, before I even would say it, it's like she sensed it and would like fucking cut it off at the head and be like, words of affirmation, Mel, this is what I do. This is my love language. I'm going to get your ass up the mountain if it's just pushing you up with my words alone. And like, it would just like, before I could even get in my head about it. And I think that makes a huge difference. And I think both her and I, being a little more of the similar person in our relationships, we have two fucking amazing men behind us, which partner-wise, I don't think everyone can always say. And I think just getting to recognize friendship-wise and partner-wise, it was a really just great trip to experience and just one more way to show like how special who you have in your life is when you choose your tribe, you know, and like getting to do those things. That's why we have people like you guys in my life, for example, and doing BC Outdoor Project and adventuring together. I think adventuring together needs to be done more. I think people and families, including with their kids and otherwise, just get so much closer through doing those things that just bring to light a little bit more what it is to be human and an animal and to do hard things and get out of the everyday routine and the stress and the constant validation of whether something was of value or not. And instead you just get to see it and live it with the people around you and know your value and feel your value and feel the value of what you're doing together. And I think that was the other thing that was just, you know, like pretty cool that I don't know that everyone always gets on these trips, but I think it was just a good point in my life that I was looking for it.
Yeah. And I think that it brings up like another good point of something that's unique about the sport is you have to rely on your group. Like you, this isn't something you can do on your own. And like, everybody at some point over the weekend needed help for someone for something. Like one of our group members got up there and his inflatable mat had a leak in it. And he was like freezing the first night because his R value was significantly lower without it. And like, we happened to have a patch kit, like, you know, and lent that to him. And then like, I was on the glacier one day and forgot my sunscreen and my lip balm. And like, he had extra and like gave that to me. And like, Luke needed electrolytes that someone else had brought. Like, you know, we got halfway up the mountain and, you know, Austin was leading and, you know, breaking trails really hard. And so we switched it up so that the other rope team could go ahead to break trail for a while. Like, you can't get up, you can't do something like this completely independently without help from other people. And I think that's a good reminder, especially for people like me and Austin, who are used to being so independent and used to like, I'm like being the mother duck of the trip, that like, it's okay to be humble. It's okay to have problems. It's okay that it's hard sometimes and it's uncomfortable, and it can all live together simultaneously at the same time with joy and happiness and bittersweet and, you know, euphoria. Like, and I think a lot of our lives, we're just trying to like sort it all out, right? Of like, this is what happiness is and this is what sadness is and this, you know, and like compartmentalize it and kind of get through it and be self-reliant. And I do think that doing an adventure trip like this and picking the right people or picking your tribe. And sometimes making new tribe members. them picking you back is a really humbling and I think like important experience to like just really connect with yourself. And like you really have to understand self-management. Like you were saying, you have to have the right brain and mindset for it, right? Like you have to understand self-management. You have to understand like, when is my panic system? I had 3 panic attacks on the mountain. I have panic anxiety disorder. And so it like stretches you to know like, when is this voice important and trying to save my life? And when is this voice exaggerated and actually putting me in danger? And like having people around you that support you through that and kind of know you and, can help give you the right cues at the right time is part of learning that self-management.
Wow. You guys, you're new women. You grew. This is super cool. I loved hearing this story. I have like 1,000 more questions, but I know Mel, you need to go to sleep in Austin. I think you also need some sleep.
Camper's midnight.
Yeah, I feel like of all the things, it's the fatigue after. Like, I'm also so stoked on how my body performed soreness wise. Like, next day was sore and the basic impact, but like, it's the fatigue and like the letdown. And I think just with any big high stress, good or bad, there's always a letdown period. And I think we're still in the middle of it, which is why we knew we had to do this podcast during this whole experience.
It's fresh and authentic.
Yeah. We'll have to do another one where we talk maybe even more about gear or other things and other questions, because I think this is a good chance to talk about our feelings and empowerment.
I mean, let's be honest though, that's a more important part, right?
Yeah.
Like that's why you do these things. So
yeah.
I'm gonna let you guys go tonight. We're gonna do this again, though. You don't have a choice, Mel. You're gonna have to jump on and tell me about your tent, and we'll talk about backpacks. We should just have you on to talk about backpacks. I would love that.
Since we can clearly try them. I can do an Instagram takeover, and we'll just do an Insta live from my garage, and I'll walk people through all the various backpacks on my wall.
Let's do it. Done. No problem. Sweet. All right, guys. Cool. We'll call it a night.
Thanks for having us.